Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Nedarim is Samech Zayin. Today we begin the 10th parak of the Masechta. Really hitting now the home stretch of the Masechta. 11 parakim in total. We are discussing now the topic of Hafaras Nedarim. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is one of the Zech Nishmas Libby Gabriela Bashmuel. And let us begin our discussion regarding the topic of Hafaras Nedarim. Up until now, in the throughout the ninth parak, we talked about making a Pesach through a Chacham. Pesach Ay De Chacham is where a person makes a neder, man or woman, and the neder then is going to be released by the Chacham. Chacham is going to ask questions regarding, at the time when you made the neder, did you consider X, Y, and Z? And if you did, would you have made the neder? And if the honest response is, no, I would not, so then he's going to be released from his neder. But that is basically a release based on the principle that he didn't take everything into consideration when he made the neder, and therefore, had he thought about everything, he never would have made the neder. In other words, it's really an uprooting of the neder. It's a total siluk. It's a total removal of the neder. It's like it's as if it's expunged. What we're going to be talking about is that the father or the husband, and we're going to be very specific in terms of when either one of them, and as we'll see in today's Mishnah, sometimes you need a joint venture between the husband and the father. But with the husband or the father, have a right to simply annul the neder. This is what's called Hafaras Nedarim. So this is explicitly mentioned in the Torah. The going to a Chacham and asking a Sheila and receiving a Pesach from a Chacham, so that is not mentioned actually in the Torah itself, but Hafara is what the Torah explicitly discusses. You turn to the beginning of Parshas Matos, and the Torah there, in the first Aliyah of Parshas Matos, goes through details. It's the entire first Aliyah, goes through in detail the sequence of Hafara. Later this morning, we're going to go through the Psukim inside, as we're going to need to know the Psukim in order to understand really most of today's daf. But in the meantime, however, we could just simply start the Mishnah. But before we start the Mishnah, let's go over information that we've gone over a number of times, but it's critical to know this, to understand the Mishnah, and that's the following. A girl, when she grows, she goes through three developmental stages. Stage number one is what we call katana. She's a minor. And that takes us from the age of birth up until the age of 12. When she turns 12, when she's bas mitzvah, so she leaves the state of being a katana. As a minor, as a katana, so she doesn't have das, she doesn't have a mindset, and and she's under the jurisdiction of her father, right? The father has all rights to her as a minor. The father can do many things. The Torah allows the father to marry her off and gives the father other rights as well. This is the stage of being a ketana. Now, there's a halacha regarding making a neder, which we haven't even discussed yet, which is kind of, it's funny, we're so deep into the Masechta, and that is that when it comes to a man and a woman, so they can make a nedarim, not only can they make a neder when a boy turns the age of 13, a girl turns the age of 12, but when in the world of nedarim, there's an extended year, there's a bonus year, if you will, and that is a year before bar and bas mitzvah. Before a boy turns 13, the year beforehand, so he's what's called samach li'ish, he's close to being, close to manhood. Most, in all other halachas, is not yet a man, he's not yet obligated, nor liable for all the mitzvahs and the averus in the Torah. However, in the world of Nedarim, he can create an eder from the age of 12 to 13. And the same thing is true regarding a girl. A girl who becomes bas mitzvah at 12, so she can make an eder from the age of 11 to 12. So, when we talk about a katana, a minor girl, so the truth of the matter is that even though she's a minor, there is a year opportunity while she's a katana where she can make a neder, and that's from the age of 11 to 12. Good. Ad kan. Then, after she turns a nara, then she becomes, after she becomes a katana, the next stage is that she's a nara. Nara now is from the age of 12 to 12 and a half years, 12 and a half years old. So this stage of nara, where she, on one hand, is an adult, but during her stage of nairus, she's still under the jurisdiction of her father, she's still under the domain of her father, and the father still has rights over her from 12 to 12 and a half years of age. And then after 12 and a half years of age, she then becomes a bogeris, a fully developed, mature woman, independent of her father. This is the general stages of the development of a of a girl to a woman, she goes from Ketana to Nara to Bogeres. Ketana, fully under the jurisdiction of her father. The other side, Bogeres, fully and independent, removed from the jurisdiction of her father. And Nara, so it's a quasi-stage. Quasi-stage in that she is, on one hand, an adult, meaning 12 years of age, chayv in all the mitzvahs, liable to all the averus in the Torah. At the same time, for those next 6 months, she's going to be still be under the jurisdiction of her father. Good, that's one introductory point that we all need to know. Next thing we need to know is that marriage. Marriage in the Torah comes in two stages. Again, something that you've been around, you know this all well, you know this well, but this is literally the ABCs of our parak. Marriage comes in two stages. The first stage of marriage is what's called, this referred to as erusin. Erusin, engagement, is not really a good translation of the word erusin. In fact, it's a bad translation. Engagement just simply means that we are engaged to be married. We're going to have a date and we're going to get married. But in English, engagement doesn't really have any legal ramifications. Erusin, on the other hand, is the first stage of marriage. You're married at erusin. A man goes over to a woman, gives her a ring and says, Harei HaMekudesh Li, presents the ring in front of two witnesses, so now they are married. They're not going to live together as a husband and wife. There's not going to be any financial obligation from him to her, but they're married. For all intents and purposes, they're married. If they want to sever the marriage from the point of erusin and onward, excuse me, you're going to need a get. You're going to need a divorce document. If she's with another man, so that's niyuf, that's adultery. So in other words, they are married. That's the first stage of marriage. However, even though they're married, even though they've undergone the first stage of marriage, nevertheless, there is no... They do not live together, husband and wife. There is no financial obligation, so they're married, but they're not together. Okay, that's I know it's what to digest, but we've gone over this time and again. This is Correct. Minhag in Yehuda, correct. And then there's the second stage of marriage, which is nisuin. Okay, now when we talk about a young woman leaving the domain of her father, so really it can be done in one of two ways. Number one is what we discussed in the beginning of the introduction, and that is she becomes a bogeres. Once she becomes a bogeres, so that's just, she now becomes a total independent. She leaves the jurisdiction of her father. There's another way that a woman can leave the jurisdiction of her father even before she's a bogeres, and that is marriage. Marriage now basically is going to be that the husband is going to assume the role now of being the, she'll be now under the domain of her husband, not under the domain of her father. However, marriage only removes her from the domain of her father, only second stage of marriage, not the first stage of marriage. First stage of marriage, erusin, so if she is not yet a bogeres, and she only has undergone erusin, so she's still under the domain of her father. Yes, it's true that she's married, so she has... She has a husband in tow, but because she hasn't undergone the second stage of the marriage, she's still under the domain of her father. And this is what we call Nara Hamu'urasa. Okay, so the key term over here, Nara Hamu'urasa, really has two concepts involved. Number one, Nara, she's not yet a Bogeres. Mu'urasa, she's not yet a Nesua. And so because she's not yet a Bogeres and she's not yet a Nesua, she's still under the jurisdiction, under the domain of her father.
Only 6 months.
And it's only for a 6 month period. Okay. Yes. Yes, so so generally speaking, regarding all other halachos, the assumption is no. And for reasons which we'll try to articulate later in the Masechta, so the halachos and the Dharm, the Torah gives a bonus year. Okay, that's right now the best way I can present it. Hopefully later I'll present it even better. But that's just a simple halacha. Okay, so with all that stated, so now we are going to do the following. We're going to read the Mishnah. We're going to go through the Mishnah. Later this morning, we're going to go through the Pesukim inside. Mishnah, Nara Marasa. So now she's a Nara Marasa. So again, she's not yet a Bogeres. Murasa, she hasn't undergone the second stage of marriage of Nisuin. Aviu Bala Mefir Nedareha. So the Mishnah teaches us that if she makes a Neder, so now in order for the Neder to be released through this process of called Hafara, so you're going to need a joint venture, and that joint venture is going to be done by the father and by the husband. The conjunction over here, the correct conjunction, is going to be and, not or, but and. You need a joint venture between the two in order for the hafara to work. Hefer av, and then the Mishnah, just to make sure that we understand this point clearly, the Mishnah goes on to articulate. Hefer av, alo hefer abal, hefer abav, alo hefer av. If the father does it without the husband, if the husband does it without the father, ain't a mufar. So the it is not going to be hafara. It's not going to be an annulment. Vein tzarech lamar shekiyam echad mehem. Now, it goes without saying, says the Mishnah, but the Mishnah says, but I'll say it, that if one of them is Mekayim, meaning, what are your options if you are either the father or the husband and you heard about her neder? You really have three options. Option number one is your mefer. You null it, which the Torah grants permission for either the father or the husband to do. Again, in the Nara Marasa case, you need both. But option number one is you could do afara. Option number two is you could do nothing. Just simply not react and not respond. And we know, and we'll talk more about this later throughout this perek, is that 24 hours after the neder is made, if there was no response, so that's it. Her neder now is unannullable. Okay? Sorry for words that don't exist, but yeah, hopefully you understand. And then there's a third reaction, and that is kiyum, meaning the father or the husband can say, not only do I hear the neder, I'm a kayin, right? Certify, ratify, give a stamp to the neder. Yes, the neder is a good neder. And after kiyum, that's it. In other words, now, once the father, the husband were mekayim, so you can no longer annul it. And the kiyum is only going to work, right, for the point of 24 hours, right? Correct. Absolutely correct. So we're going to be discussing that as well. So biyom shamo, it's from the point of hearing it. So we'll talk about that later in the Masechta as well. Right now, today's lesson today is that during the stage of Nara Marasa, you need a joint venture. You need the father and the husband to both be mefer. And the Mishnah punctuates by saying, the Mishnah makes two very clear points. Number one is that it has to be both. It can't be one without the other. Number two in the Mishnah, if either one of them is mekayim, that certainly then validates the neder, and now the other party certainly no longer has the ability to annul such a neder. Okay, Adkan. Now, later this morning, we're going to go through the psukim inside, because once you know the halacha, and now you go back to the Torah and you read the psukim inside, you're going to be hard pressed to find where these halachas are located in the Torah. Meaning, this idea of joint hafara of the father and the husband during her stage of Nara Marasa is not explicitly mentioned in the Torah. So that's going to be most of today. We'll get to shortly from now. And that is, where exactly is the location of this halacha in the Torah? We're going to come back to that point. In the meantime, however, we start with the Gemara. The Gemara is bothered by what seems to be the superfluous nature of the Mishnah. First, the Mishnah starts off by saying, the father and the husband can be made for a neder during Nara Marasa. And then the Mishnah says, and if one does it without the other, so then, no good. It's not a hafar, it's not an annulment. Okay, sounds like the Mishnah is repeating itself. The Gemara says, no. Oh, avio bala ketani. No, because whenever you see a vav in the Mishnayos, the vav could be an and, the vav could be an or. Right, the vav in the Mishnayos is not necessarily just the conjunction of and. It could be or. So what the Mishnah could have, the way the Mishnah could have been read without that second sentence of the Mishnah is that when she's an Ara Marasa, the father or the husband could be made for her neder. So the Mishnah therefore wants to be asked to clearly know that the correct way to understand the vav is an and, not an or. Kamash Malan. Vein tzarech lamar shekiyam echad mehem. So lama lelemisne. So the Gemara says, now the Mishnah moves on to another point, and that is, if one of these two parties, either the father or the husband, is mekayim, so that's it, story now is over. In other words, then you can't do afara. To which the Gemara's reaction to that is, wow, is that point obvious? Meaning, if I need both of them to be mefer, and the Mishnah clearly articulates that I need both of them to be mefer, now if one of them is mekayim, That's a no-brainer. Of course, now there's no longer going to be afara. So that's exactly what moves the Gemara. Lama lulemisne hashta yeshlama hafer zebelo zebelo klum. So if one of them is mefer without the other, that's nothing. that doesn't create hafara. So now, if one of them goes even one step further, and not just isn't mefer, but goes in the other direction, is actually mekayim, so then it clearly then the hafara would never work. Why would the Mishnah need to teach us something which is at this point in time totally superfluous? Now, just by the way, the Ran points out, you'll see this in the Mishnah. It's not totally, it's not an obscure thing for the Mishnah to make a point and then follow up with another point which is superfluous. But the Ran argues that over here in our Mishnah, really, the second point in the Mishnah is beyond superfluous, meaning it's so obvious, right? You need both to be mefer, and then the Mishnah says, and if one is mekayim, meaning of course.
Maybe he changed his mind.
All right, so perfect, Danny. It's as if you prepared. So the Gemara says, "Laman leitzrich lemisne ki leitzrich leiv kegon da hafer echem mehem v'kiyem echem mehem." Or I added words in the Gemara, but kegon da hafer echem mehem. So the Gemara says, "I'll tell you what the Mishnah is coming to teach us: the following novel point, and that is, let's say, for example, again, she's an ara marasa. I need a joint venture of a fara. I need both the husband and the father to be mefer. Let's say one of the two does a hafara. Good. He logs in his disapproval of the neder, and he's formally mefer the neder. Now, looking for the other partner to react, the other partner, what does he do? V'kiyem echad. And then the other partner says, no, I like the neder. Great neder. And he's mekayim. Then, chazer mekayim v'nisha al hakamaso. And then after the kiyem, he thinks about it, and he says, no. And what does he do? He goes to a chacham, and he asks a she'ela to be released from his kiyum.
Charata?
Now, charata, or, you know, did you consider X, Y, and Z, Pesach? He goes to a chacham. So first of all, let's introduce ourselves to the idea that when one of them is mekayim, so can you ask a she'ela? So the answer is going to be yes, meaning that is a novel point, but... Good. That's what we're seeing right now. That after the kiyum, you can go and you can ask a she'ela on your kiyum. Again, all this you're still on the clock.
It's not his neder.
It's not his neder, but because he had the Torah empowers him to either uproot or to validate. So he's connected to the neder.
No, but is that a confirmation, not the neder, right?
It's not his neder, but the Torah empowers him to confirm or to uproot it.
But his when he goes to the chacham, right?
Yeah.
He's not annulling the neder. He's annulling his confirmation.
Correct. Absolutely correct. So mekayim v'nishal mekal kamaso, and he goes to the chacham and he says, I want my confirmation to be uprooted. So, and the chacham does that. So now let's go over what just happened. The young betrothed woman made a neder. Good. You need two people to be mefer. Dad and her husband and her betrothed. Good. One of them says, I'm mefer. Right? Officially logs in that he wants to annul it. Waiting for the other to react, the other says, I'm mekayim. Then he says, you know what? I want to backtrack on that. Goes to a chacham. Tells the chacham, I wanted to be mekayim, but now I want to change my mind. I'm petitioning the chacham to remove me from my kiyum.
Okay, wait, one second.
So he goes to the chacham now, wants to remove his kiyum. Chacham says, you know what? I find the ability to remove your kiyum. Kiyum now has been removed. So now here's what I might have thought. So now it's a very legitimate havamina. So now this kiyum has been removed, so now he has a vote. In other words, his vote has been reinstated, and now he says, I want to be mefer. So you might have thought, ma'u detema, now we have a chiddush on our hands. Ma'u detema, ma'u de'uke ha'akre, he put in his kiyum, but his kiyum was uprooted, so now he's back to square one, and now I would have thought that if he logs in now hafara, so his hafara together with the other's hafara should work. Kamash malan, de'mefir shnei bevasachas. Now we have a chiddush on our hands, now we understand what the Mishnah is coming to teach us at the end. And that is that this does not work. Simply does not work.
But didn't the clock run out of time anyway? I mean,
let's assume, just for the purposes of making this point, that the clock did not run out, and that they're still within the 24-hour window, and it does not work. And it only begs the question: why? Why doesn't it work?
Why not? When he annuls in his confirmation,
yeah.
God by itself should say that it's doing the offer.
No, the only thing it does is it just removes.
Why would he go back to a point?
I understand why he would, but it's not enough just to make an assumption. Meaning, in order to do hafara, you have to actually log in on Mayfair. To just simply say that I'm removing my kiyum, so I understand. It's implicit. I understand your point. I understand your point. Implicit in that is that he wants to be Mayfair. But that's not enough. In order to be Mayfair, you have to actually be Mayfair. It has to be an act of hafara. All right, so it only begs the question, and that is, so why shouldn't that work? Meaning, good, now the Mishnah has taught us a chiddush, and it's a strong chiddush. And that is that even though he was Mekayim, and even though he uprooted his Kiyum, he can't log in with the word, he can't log in with the Afara. So let's take a look at the Ran, where the Ran addresses this. And really, the Ran addresses this, he quotes the Rashba, okay, all Spanish Rishonim, and he quotes the Rashba, and the Rashba is bothered by the question. Let's see how let's see some of this inside. Really important discussion here within the Ran. The Hiksha HaRashba. So if you want to find me in the Ran, I'm reading this portion inside. So it is more than halfway down from the top of the Ran. First words in the line in the Ran is Leila Misne, and it's the last three words of the line. The Hiksha HaRashba Zichrono Levracha. So the Ran over here is quoting the Rashba. Amay Amin and Dafar Kamaisabat Lala Dahala Basadish Allah Kamasokim the Chacham Oker Zaneder Mikara Hareki Ilolo Hikim Klal. So the Rashba over here is bothered by the very simple question. He did a Kiyum. He regretted it. He went to a Chacham. The Chacham removed his Kiyum. So isn't that basically taking out an eraser? And it's erasing. It's expunging his Kiyum. So now, shouldn't he be back at square one? And if he's back at square one, so shouldn't we now say, good, so let him now register his Afara. Let that Afara, together with the other's Afara, be a proper joint venture in order to annul her neder. Why doesn't it work? That's a very simple question. The Ukidanam Beperkesh Mekadesh. And the Rashba says, and I not only think that this is a strong question, now obviously we know the answer is it doesn't work. What we're really going to grapple with is why doesn't it work? And the Rashba says, and before I tell you why, let me just reinforce how strong a question this is. Let's go over something that we will learn together in the Gemara Kiddushin.
Why does it work? The cancellation of confirmation?
His cancellation of his confirmation is canceled. His confirmation is now canceled.
That's the one that's not.
Good. Now, he's no longer confirmed.
The cancellation of confirmation is that acceptable?
That's totally acceptable. And so now he's confirmed. Correct. And now he wants to do Afara, and that doesn't work. And why? Why doesn't it work? If we cancel this confirmation, so good. So now he's back to zero. So why can't he do Afara at that point in time? And the Ran's quoting the Rashba. And the Rashba says, and let's go over something we're going to learn together in Kiddushin. Let's say the Gemara Kiddushin discusses the following. A man marries a woman. He says, but look, here's what I don't want. I don't want a woman who makes nedarim. So if I betroth her and I find out later, subsequent to that, that she has nedarim, that's a deal breaker. So he marries her out tonight. Okay, we're going to see. Gemara Kiddushin is replete with examples of a man marrying a woman out tonight. And ain't mekudeshes. And the halacha is that if she has nedarim, so that's it. The Kiddushin is not valid. However, the Gemara Kiddushin goes on to say, but let's say this woman goes to a chacham and says, "Look, I got a problem. I married this man, wonderful man, but he didn't want a girl with nedarim, and I made nedarim. So what I would like to do now is I would like to get a release from my neder." The halacha goes like this. If the chacham can legitimately release her from a nedarim, so what does that do? It expunges her nedarim.
It never existed.
Those nedarim never existed. And therefore, marriage is a valid marriage. The Gemara Kedusha is just talking about she's a marriageable age. So Harei Zem Kedushas Dechashvin Lakiila Lo Hayala Nedarim Klal Bishas Kedushin. So because once you get your neder expunged by a chacham, that's it. It's erased. So Hachanami. So the Rashba says. So same thing here. Labasa de Ishel Nechle Hagavra Kiila Lo Hikim. Now I know over here again. The it's not the same. But it's the same idea. Over here, the husband or the father confirmed. They were Mekayim. And then after the confirmation, they said, you know what? Mistake. They go to a Chacham. The Chacham releases him from his confirmation. Now, I know it's not the same, obviously. In other words, we're not talking about the release of a neder. We're talking about the release of a confirmation. But Again, one of the things we're learning today is that you can be released from your confirmation. So once a chacham releases you from your confirmation, so just like we saw the Gemara in Kiddushin, that when a woman is released from her neder, that's it, it's gone, it's expunged, it never existed, here too. Shouldn't we say the same thing? The husband was Mekayim, or the father, either one. One of them is Mekayim, and then they get to go to a chacham, and then they get released from it. So shouldn't it be expunged? Shouldn't it be erased? And the Mishnah tells us that after that, you can't do hafar anymore. Why not? So me'olam l'didi lav koshi hikla. So that was the Rashba's question. The Ron says, I don't think it's a question. And why not? Mitoch shehu ma'isa gamar af agav dechozman. Sorry, I'm sorry. Dikidushin. Mitoch shehu ma'isa gamar af agav dechozman shelo itira lo chayla ki itira amrina digla milso demikar chayla. Because in the case of kiddushin, what happened? The man was mekarish the woman. That's an act. That's a formal act. In of itself, perfectly complete and legitimate. Happens to be that there was a condition, there was a string attached. And that is that she doesn't have nedarim. Turns out she had nedarim. She goes to a chacham. Chacham expunges her of her neder. Okay. And then, after the she'el and after the release, so now, the complete act of kedushin can now be instated. Reinstated. Good. Ava hafar dechad mehani kalshalatfei deba'ap enaf shalav midihi. However, during the stage of her being a nara marasa, it's not that hafara of one without the other is half of hafara. It's really, it's incomplete. In other words, in order for the hafara to work, you need the dual hafara of both husband and father. Ela bitzrufa. You need them to come together. I'm sorry. Ela bitzrufa de'idach. Ve'afila bitzrufa de'idach l'amani kol zman she'en ruin leitzaref. Biyachad. And it's not that I need one plus one when it comes to the father and the husband. I need two, right. It's not one plus one, I need two. Now I know today's math is going to sound a little bit strange, but think about it. And you know, really, and the Ron says, I'll try to make this point as clearly as possible. Let's say, for example, we're going to learn this later on in the parak. Let's say one does a hafara, one of them does a hafara, and then he dies. Okay. And then the other one says, well, I'm going to piggyback now on his afar, and I'm going to do afar together with his, and it's going to work. And yes, and the Gemara says later on, no, that's not going to work. Because it's not enough to go one plus one. In order for the afar of the both of them to work, it has to come as a joint venture. Hilkach, kevin da afar dechad afilu kilo hekim chavrei klisha tuva, kol hecha de hekim, kevin da ishaita lo chazi litzrufe, badlalo legamre. And therefore the Ron says, that's why over here it doesn't work. Because the first one did hafara. And then the second one does hakama. Once the second one does hakama, it's the opposite of hafara. Okay, now, he's going to go to a chacham, he's going to get released from the chacham. But all the while, however, they're not combinable. The only way that the hafara of father and husband work is only going to be as a joint venture. Where that means that when one does a hafara, the second one's hafara can only work in conjunction with the first. It's not one plus one. It must come as a joint venture.
What if one
refuses the
hafara with the husband
again? Oh, very good. The kevin lochazi aishaita afilu kolohekim chavre klisha tuva kolhecha deikim. Good. So the Ron says that's how I think the question is answered, because it really, what this answer the Ron does is really provides us a very powerful insight into how the joint hafara of father and husband work. It works not as one plus one, but it works that it must only come through a joint contribution hafara of both the husband and the father. And because one of them did a hakama, and it's true that at a later point in time he's going to get released from his hakama, but that what happened with his hakama is it no longer becomes a joint venture. Now, Ben asked the question, which is, how about after that? Meaning good. Now he went to a chacham, now he got released from his hakama. Can after that point in time, can the two of them now come together and say again, okay, We're back to square one. Now we'd like to both do a hafara. Does that work? So the Ran's opinion is, yeah, it does work at a subsequent point in time. However, he does point out, the Ran points out, I didn't read this part inside, the Ran points out that not everyone agrees, and there are other Rishonim who just...
Is there a time limit on the second
hafara? All this is within 24 hours of hearing about the nether.
So everything, including the hafara, and the reading that we're having
correct.
We'll talk
about that later. In other words, what if they don't hear about this at the same time? It's that they have to come as a joint venture. In other words, the only way hafara works in this case of Nara Maras is when they come together. Now, together does not necessarily mean at the exact same time, but in other words, only when I have one hafara laying on top of another hafara. But in other words, it's not one plus one. It has to be specifically as a... Right. When you write safety box. That's a great mashal. Okay, yes.
Was the consensus, in other words, within 24 hours, it has to be...
Correct. Very good. Oh, that's a great analogy. Okay, let's go on in the Gemara. Okay, so we're at the two dots right now. We are now up to the Gemara Venara Marasa Avio Vala Mefirna Dareha. Now, I already told you earlier this morning that if you look at the Psukim, and really, I encourage you, please, go through it later today, tomorrow, right, over the course of this parak. Go through the Psukim inside. It's the first Ali in Parshas Matos, where there the Torah outlines the stability of Hafara. Now, I'm not going to go through all the Psukim inside. It's not that long. It's, 16, 17 Psukim. Okay, 16. Okay, oddly enough, the Parshas Matos starts with the second Pasuk. Right, Vaidaber Moshe Roshe Amatos. And the first pasuk is the end of the last parak. You know this, right? We've gone over this before. Prakim and Psukim. That's not a Jewish innovation. Okay, we like it. It's a great way to find the right place in the Torah, but it's not a Jewish innovation. So here's a good example where the first pasuk in Perek Lamed is the end of Parshas Pinchas. The second pasuk is the beginning of Parshas Matos. So why did when the Christians broke it up into chapter and verse, why did they do that? Okay, you'll... Okay.
So chapter
3. I don't know. Anyway, but
we said the Parshiot, though.
Parshiot we said, but
so
in other words...
Separation is nothing to do with the Christian division, because we said Parshiot.
Correct. So I'm just curious why it is that they started their 30th chapter of the book of Numbers in as the last pasuk in Pinchas. They also knew about the division of Parshios. So what were they thinking? I don't know. So anyway, so it's the beginning of Parshas Matos, right? The first Aliyah. So Vayidaber Moshe al Rosh Matos. Now I'm not going to go through all the pasukim inside, but here's what we need to know in order to understand the Gemara. There are really three different sections within this parsha of Hafara. Section number one. Right. The first verse section is that if a man makes a neder, he's got to abide by his neder, and if he doesn't, he violates the Yisr of Lo Yachal Devaro. Okay. Now, then the Torah describes a woman. So Parsha. So there are three sections. Section number one really begins with Pasuk Dalet. V'ishak yisidur neder l'Hashem v'asra yisar beveis aviyah benureha. So you have a woman making a neder, and she's beveis aviyah, she's in the house of her father. Now, it doesn't mean physically within the house of the father, although it does, but it means under the jurisdiction of her father. Now, if the father rejects the neder, if he objects to the neder, b'yom shamo, kol nederah v'asra asher asra nasha, lo yakum v'ashem yisakla, kini aviyosa. Okay, father has the ability to annul the neder, to reject the neder. Good. Again, the details, we'll go through the details. Okay, just right now, just making we're making a very specific point. V'im hayosi elish. Now we're in pasuk Zion. V'im hayosi elish neder ala. Now, what if she's with a man? Okay, so I'm going to say she's married, although right now I won't be specifically clear about what level of marriage we're talking about. And so she's now married. I'm moving quickly through the Pesukim. Now, if, let's say, when the husband hears, he objects to the neder, v'hefiras nedera, asher Allah, so the husband has the right now to annul the neder that she made. That's miftas fasa, asher asuan nafsha v'shem yisachla. And then, neder amana gurshakla, asher asuan nafsha yakumala. Now, if she's either widowed or divorced, so therefore she doesn't have a husband, and therefore the neder that she makes is going to sustain. Now, section 3, beginning in Pasuk Yud Aleph. The imbase isha nidara. Now, if she makes a neder while in the house of her husband. Now, that's confusing, because the previous section already talked about where she was married. So what's happening over here? The imbase isha nidara l'asra isa al nashah b'shva v'shama isha v'echir ishla lo ini asa v'kama kol dara v'chol isa asher asra al nashah yakov. The im hefer yafer osam isha b'yam shamo. Now, if her husband rejects the neder on the day which he heard it, husband has the right to annul the neder, to reject the neder, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides a slicha. And later, by the way, we're going to be discussing why it is that Hashem has to provide a slicha. The husband rejected the neder, everything should be good. We'll talk about that later. Anyway, however, here's the point that we need for the rest of today's daf, and that is, there are three parshiyos in the Torah. Parsha number 1, she is in her father's house. Parsha number 2, section number 2 of the Parsha, she's married. Section number 3, she's married. What is going on? What's going on in section number 2? What's going on in section number 3? So what we're going to learn over the course of the remainder of today's daf is, what is happening in section number 2 is that she's a Nara Hamurasa. Now the Torah doesn't say that, so that is what requires our attention. And the remainder of today's daf, where the daf is going to, through clues, investigate, analyze, and come to the conclusion that the second section is speaking specifically about Nara Amarasa, even though that is not explicitly mentioned in the Torah. Let's see this in the Gemara. Nara Amarasa, Avi Ovala Mefir Nadara, Mi Nalan. Gemara's question is very simple. Where do we know this from? And now, after having gone through the introduction of the Chumash, you'll now know that's a very strong question. Amarabba Amakravi, Ima Yosi Eliish Nadara Alaha. So we're now focusing on section 2. Im hayosiya mikalan aramasa shavio bala mefir nedera. So you see that when she's an aramasa, the father and the husband both have the ability to annul the neder. Now, again, you look at section 2, you read section 2, and you'll say to yourself, really? That it doesn't say that in Chumash. So that prompts the Gemara to ask these next questions. Ema, hi krab benesuksi. First of all, maybe the Torah there is talking about where she's married, fully married, second stage of marriage. So the Gemara says, well, can't be, because you go to the third section. Third section is talking about where she's married. So obviously, the Torah is not just going to repeat the same halacha twice. Section number 2, she's married. Section number 3, she's married. And the Torah is not going to do that. Obviously, the Torah is interested in teaching us a chiddush. So section number 2 must be where she is mi'urasa. She's only betrothed. So the Gemara suggests, well, maybe section 2 and section 3 is talking about where she's married. Question, why would the Torah need to repeat that? Answer, maybe the Chiddush of the Torah is that the second time the Torah is repeating this information is to teach me that the husband can annul, but not previously existing nedarim. Right, it's like medical insurance, right? No pre-existing medical conditions. Okay. Only from this point going forward, husband's ability to be mayfair only from nedarim that she made after the marriage, not before the marriage. So the Gemara says, "V'lav mi meila shamas mina." So the Gemara says, "I knew that already." Meaning, I didn't need a Torah to repeat the section 2 and section 3 to get me to this point. I knew that already. So the e-bias, and why did I know that already? So if you take a look at the Ron inside, it's the it's based on the fact that even if all I had was section 3 of Beis Isha, so then I would have arrived at the conclusion that only in her father's house can pre-existing nedarim be annulled. But once she moves to her husband, so the husband, by definition, can only annul only nedarim that came about after the marriage. So again, question on the table. How do I know that section 2 is talking about Nara Hamurasa? So so the Gemara suggests as follows. Well, maybe it's the opening of section 2. Section 2 opens up with the words V'im hayo sihiye. Right? The Pasuk Zion. V'im hayo sihiye le'ish n'dereh aleha. The word havaya, generally speaking, throughout Shas, is understood to mean the first stage of marriage, kiddushin. So that tips us off to the idea that section 2 is where she was married, but only the first stage of marriage. Okay, v'ema. Okay, back to the Gemara. We're now in Samach Zayin Amud Beis. We're two lines down. Let us suggest av l'chud de mefer. So the so maybe as a suggestion says the Gemara. During the stage of Erusin, remember, Erusin, she does not leave the jurisdiction of her father. We went over this in the beginning of today's shiur. That at Erusin, at the point of Erusin, if she's still, as long as she's still a Nara, meaning once she's a Bogeris, the act of Bagris alone, the stage of Bagris alone already removes her from the domain of her father. But if she is a Nara, or we can also add if she's a Katana as well, and she only has undergone Erusin, she's still under the jurisdiction of the father. So the Gemara over here asks a really simple question. So Ema, so let's say, Av l'chud de mefer. So the Gemara says, maybe, while a Nara, only the father by himself could be mefer. Im kain, v'asra isar, beis avia yani osa lamali. So hasha yeshlam rabba makamaros mefer, av l'chud de shlabba makamaros mibaye. So the Gemara says, well then, section 1 and section 2 become totally superfluous, because let's think about this. If the father's ability to be mefer works with exclusivity while she's an arusa, so then it goes without saying that if there's no husband in the picture, of course the father by himself could be mefer the neder.
No,
so once I know section number 2, and if in section number 2 the father could be mefer by himself, so then for sure the father could be mefer when there's no husband involved. So good. So the Gemara says that we know can it be. Ema avli by arus for arus l'chud de mefer. So again, the Gemara now right now is just testing the water. Gemara in its experimentation is just trying to figure out. Well, maybe we could say this. Maybe we could say this. Now the Gemara is suggesting. Well, maybe we could do the. Maybe we'd say the following. So maybe the father to be mefer does need the husband. Okay. Again, during the section 2 stage of Nara Hamurasa. Maybe the father needs a husband, but arus l'chud de mefer. But maybe the husband on his own could be mefer. Not like our Mishnah told us that it has to specifically only come about through a joint venture. V'chitema avdikas of rechman alamali. So, and then you'll ask me the question. So, what is the point of the father? Mibayle dahai hekim hekim. So the Gemara says, and maybe the point is as follows. If the husband by himself could do afara, so then what is dad's contribution? What is his koach? What's his power? Maybe his power is that his afara by itself doesn't work. But if he does hakama, if he ratifies, if he certifies an eder, so then he can block the husband's ability to do afara. Gemara says maybe that's what's going on in section number 2. Im kain beis ishana dara lamai kasav. So the Gemara says, if you're right, if we are correct in that presumption, so then we get to section 3, and section 3 now becomes perfectly superfluous. Why? Because again, think about it. If we were right about section 2, we're in section 2, she's an Ara Marasa, and the husband has the ability, the sole ability to annul her neder, and the only thing the father can do is block that through Hakama. If all that's true, so then we move on to section 3. Section 3 becomes totally superfluous, because in section 3 there's no longer a father in the picture. So when there was a father in the picture, the husband can annul the neder by himself. So once there's no father in the picture, of course the husband can annul the neder by himself. He's not even competing with anyone. So again, through just basically test and retest and retest, we've now come to the conclusion that section 2 can only be talking about now where she's a Nara Marasa, and it only is through the joint venture of husband and father that the nether is annulled. Ema, in basi shah nedara lomar she'en abam mefer bekodmin. So the Gemara says, well, Maybe we can make the argument that no, we'll go back to our position that during Nara Marasa, the husband by himself can annul. What's position number three coming to teach me? That once she goes to the second stage of marriage, the annulment of the husband only works on non-pre-existing nadarim. So the Gemara says, Umine. Arus mefer bekodmim. So the Gemara says, even that becomes a superfluous point. Because only arus, only the betrothed husband can annul pre-existing nadarim. So if that's true, I already now know that if once you go to the second stage of marriage, then the husband can't even annul previous nadarim. Al alav mishum shutfusei da'av. So the Gemara says, so therefore, once we have now argued that if I know I have three sections, and once I have section 1 and section 3, the only way that section 2 fits, so to say, meaning is going to be making a point where section 1 is still necessary and section 3 is still necessary, is that in section 2, Im HaYosiyeh is talking about where there is joint jurisdiction over her. Both the father and the husband have a certain authority over her because she's not yet a Bogera, she's still a Nara, and again, we can even include Katana in this discussion. And she's an Arusa, she's only betrothed, which means that she on one hand has not yet left the domain of her father. She has entered somewhat into the domain of her husband, and under these circumstances, it's not one without the other, it's only through the joint venture of the two, is her neder going to be uprooted. And again, the reason why this became a complicated discussion is because in the psukim themselves, there is no clear indication that section number 2, Im HaYosi Aleish, is talking about where there is a joint venture between husband and father to release her from her neder. Okay, let's review. Today we introduced ourselves to the 10th parak of the Masechta. We talked about Hafaras Nedarim. The father and or the husband, under certain circumstances, have the ability to annul the neder. This is not Shelas Chacham. Shelas Chacham is a expunging of the neder, but this is rather Hafar. This is an annulment of the neder that is granted, that the Torah grants the power to the father and the husband. If she's exclusively under the domain of the father, so then the father can be made for the neder. If she's exclusively in the domain of the husband, then the husband can be made for the neder. What we spent today talking about is, excuse me, is that when she is in Nara Hamurasa, when she's somewhere in the middle, under joint dominion of the father and the husband, so then the two of them are going to be made for the neder. What we have learned basically over the course of the day, as a summary statement, is that it must be a joint venture. And after having gone through the Rashba's question, the Ron's answer, so and Hedy, what a great analogy. We also learned today that the joint venture has to be where they're doing it jointly. It is not that one is going to be made for and the other one's going to be made for, but rather it comes as a joint venture. It doesn't mean that it has to their hafar has to be exactly at the same time, but it means that the other hafar is only going to work when the first hafar is already in place. Right, like the safety, like the security safety deposit box, where the both keys have to be in. But in other words, one hafara has to be logged in, and the other hafara has to be logged in as well. And it can't be one, and his is gone. Let's say, for example, we'll see this tomorrow or the day after. But let's say one logged in a hafara and then he died, the other hafara doesn't work anymore. It has to come in as a joint venture. And what the Gemara spent a good part of today's daf, two points in today's daf. Number one, the seemingly superfluous nature of the Mishnah. Gemara responded to that. And number two, where is all this found in the Psukim? The answer, not explicitly in the Psukim. And we had to tease it out of the Psukim based on the logical arguments of why do I necessarily need three sections in the Torah? Section number one is talking about whether there's a father. Section number three is talking about whether there's only a husband. Where is section number two? Section number two, from Psukim Zayin through Yud Aleph, is talking about where she's in this middle stage of Nara Amurasa. Although, again, you read the Psukim, you don't see this explicitly in the Psukim. That's why we have Torah Shabbat Peh, to tell us that that's what the middle section is talking about. Okay, Adkan, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up.